produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 467. What did they do next? Part 19A, Tony Kaye.
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 467 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host, Mark Anthony Kaye, will be along a little bit later. Please do get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, Mark and I return to the perennial favourite series, What Did They Do Next? When Trevor Rabin left Yes to pursue film scoring after the Talk tour, Tony Kaye also said goodbye, not only to the band, but also to the music industry, as we will hear a little later. What did he do next, and when did he return to music? Stay tuned to find out. On the social webs since the last show, and starting with the YMP Facebook page, I posted Stephen Lamb of Sonic Bond Publishing's interview with Writing Magazine, where he talks about several books he's published, including Dave Watkinson's excellent John Anderson and The Warriors, The Road to Yes. Jim Reynolds found a version of Roundabout by Allegion, or have you pronounced that, who appears to be a metal band. It's interesting to listen to, especially if you like the harder side of rock music. Personally, I can never cope with a continuous bass drum, but that's just me. Philip Mason added a photo of Yes from the Kaye and Howe era around the Yes album, in which Tony looks almost unrecognisable with a full beard, and Cheryl Reynolds posted a wonderful, colourful photo of Chris Squire, resplendent in red and green. It was my birthday this week, and many very kind people wished me many happy returns. Thank you very much. In the community posts, here is the weekly Jeffrey Mason Roundup. A link to Roman Guzman's latest Yes Sounds podcast episode, this time with a special focus on Ravens and Lullabies, from Oliver Wakeman and Gordon Giltrap. A Billy Sherwood interview, a review of Rick Wakeman's Red Planet, a 1977 review of Going for the One, a 1979 review with Patrick Mraz, a teaser for Oliver Wakeman and Clive Nolan's new 3-CD box set called Tales by Gaslight, which includes songs from the never-released third album by the pair, a Jeff Downes interview, an interview with Rick Wakeman about Bowie's Hunky Dory, part two of a Billy Sherwood interview, a very kind birthday greeting to me with a shot of Yes Tour, and a 1977 review of a concert on the Going for the One tour. Great stuff, as always. Jeff Bailey has been helping out his friend Neil Morse with some editing, and the result is a great interview with John Anderson on Neil's podcast show, the amusingly named Musicians Having Coffee and Talking About Stuff. Well worth a listen. Doug Curran also shared that interview, and Bob Martellotta sent the following. Hats off to Yes Edits for this, he says. I don't know how I missed this one. Some great remixes, like the version of XYZ's Satellite Telephone Secrets, combined with the Drama Sessions version from Yes, which is studio quality, not like the terrible demos we used to. The mashup of Conspiracy's Wish I Knew with Yes's Open Your Eyes is brilliant as well, showing off the evolution of that track. Check out their other videos as well, says Bob. Interesting stuff. And on Twitter, I shared two items of birthday swag I received. One is a printer's proof of the Tomato cover from Mexico, thanks to Keith Hoisington's garage sale, and a boxed set of the original album series, which includes Going for the One, Tomato, Drama, 90125, and Big Generator. As I said in the post, I think I might already own copies of some of these, but you can never have too many, can you? Many thanks to everyone who's been in touch in any way this week, including the commenters on last week's episode, Doug Curran, Dave Watkinson, and Ian NB.
Hi, this is Lee Pomeroy, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Now, we get a chance to talk about Tony Kaye this time in our What Did They Do Next series, and this is part 19A. So there's 19 changes we've talked about so far. Mark is here with me now. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Doing very well, keeping very busy with my just recently announced vinyl pre-order of the Year 3073 Book 2 vinyl. People have been buying it like crazy. I put up 5 test pressings, and they are already sold out by this morning.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that sounds good. I look forward to hearing that album myself. All right, then. So, Tony Kaye, let's find out about when he left. So, this is a kind of part two to our last What Did They Do Next, which was Trevor Rabin, because they both left at the same time. So I've got, as always, our kind of Yes Bible, I suppose, of Dave Watkinson's Perpetual Change. And here's how he describes it here. So here's the 1995 chapter called Onward that Dave has put together. And he says, from external appearances, the band seemed to lack inspiration, and their last album had been a relative failure in commercial terms. Something had to give. John would come to realise that the current Rabin-based approach was unlikely to fulfil his dream of taking the band into the 21st century, while Trevor himself commented on numerous occasions that he thought Talk was the creative pinnacle of Yes, and that he personally felt he had reached his creative limits within the band. 8 months of stagnation followed. By 23rd of May 1995, an announcement was made that Yes were splitting once again. Both Trevor and Tony were to leave, Trevor to contribute to the musical soundtracks of films such as The Glimmer Man, etc., as we've spoken about recently, and Tony was quitting the music business completely to run a restaurant in California. Meanwhile, John Anderson had fallen in love with a sunny town in California called San Luis Obispo, where he now began to plan the future of Yes. And so that was the beginnings, of course, of the Keys to Ascension lineup of the band and all that stuff that happened in that hometown where John put down some roots. So yes, they'd put together this new old lineup of the band with Rick Wakeman coming back in and Steve Howe and so on. And at this time, Dave tells us, Tony Kaye also commented on the rebuilding of Yes. There's a lot of damage control to be done, he said. Yes had to go back to the 70s lineup. I don't think there was any other way to go. There were too many complications and too many manipulations going on in the 80s lineup. It was getting nowhere fast. My advice to the band was that the manipulations had to stop. Yes had to take control of what they wanted to do. Managing the band is a different role for me and is something that I've wanted to do for a number of years. Interesting that. I've heard nothing negative about this lineup from the fans or from anyone. It's what people want to hear. It became obvious to me during the Union tour. There was so much fantastic music from the Yes of the 70s, but not a lot which could be classic from the 80s. I don't think we could be playing Love Will Find a Way for too long. Certainly not for the next 5 years. Even Ona was getting a bit thin. But the real Yes fans wanted to hear those older songs. I think they were feeling a little let down after Talk. There's a lot of music from the 60s and 70s, and really the whole history of the band, that should be performed again. So, off went Tony. Interesting comments about the 80s lineup, and I suppose everything does come full circle, doesn't it? But particularly that the comments about Talk, which was not a commercial success, and there were some problems, I think, with the live concerts at the time, and not being backed up by the publicity companies and so on, and not very many people turning up at some of them, I think. But interesting that Tony at least took that to mean that Talk wasn't a great Yes album. Maybe it's like drama. Maybe we've come to realise now that it was a really great work. What do you think?
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, I find Trevor's comments interesting too, thinking that it is the pinnacle of Yes's creativity, which I don't know if I would go that far. It was a fantastic record, don't get me wrong. I would think it was the creative peak, maybe like as far as production wise was, like, I mean, because it's definitely like years beyond what it was from the past couple of albums in terms of sound, right? But the writing, I think they've done some fantastic stuff in the past, and they even did some great stuff on Magnification and other records too. So I wouldn't say that was their pinnacle, but you know, it's definitely interesting to see Tony Kaye's approach to it as well. I mean, you know, I've always took his comments with a grain of salt too, because I always felt that he felt kind of bitter about his role in some of these records. He seemed very minimalized during these albums.
Yeah. I think that's right. And he was clearly disillusioned with how the band had gone, and probably, possibly, that's the influence of Trevor Rabin and his keyboard playing and all that kind of thing. And possibly even the reaction of the fans, actually, because the problem with Yes keyboard players is that if you're not as virtuosic as Rick Wakeman and Patrick Mraz, then people think of you rather differently. However, what I wanted to say was, that's a great shame that he left the music business, because you think about what he did. He was one of the most important and influential Hammond players, really, of that era. If you think about up to the Yes album and Flash and Badger, and then, you know, the things he did with David Bowie and so on, you know, he was one of the key the key figures in keyboards at the time, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely the Hammond B3 was something that he was very much known for. I mean, I go as far as to say that you can almost tell when it's Tony Kaye playing the Hammond organ. You know, he has that kind of feel to it, that kind of touch to it. And like you said, those first couple of records, he's all over those albums. You know, his signature style is all over it. And he brought up a great point about David Bowie. I mean, me being a huge Bowie collector, the Station to Station tour, I think that was 76, I think it was. He did a run of dates with him on keys, and he played Hammond organ, and some of this stuff was pretty tricky, and he did a fantastic job on Hammond organ playing some of these songs. So he's definitely very skilled, and you know my love for Flash. I mean, I love those albums, and even Badger, like One Live Badger. These are albums that I love and still spin frequently on my turntable downstairs, and Tony Kaye is all over those ones. And I think especially if you want to hear Tony Kaye at his, you know, I wouldn't say his peak, but at some of his best, put on One Live Badger. You'd be very impressed, I think.
Yeah, it's a great album. So anyway, off he went and to do his restaurateur thing and also play an awful lot of tennis, I understand, which he loved. And he only really surfaced again, as far as I can see. Now, as always in the show notes, if you know differently, please do let us know. But I can only see him resurfacing in 2002. And the first thing that he did, it seems, is a record by various artists called Pigs and Pyramids, an all-star lineup performing the songs of Pink Floyd in 2002. And we'll come back to that in a moment. But after that, of course, he really got back into music. So he took part in quite a few of these types of records, various artists type records and tribute records. He did Return to the Dark Side of the Moon, 2006. He did various artists, Abbey Road, a tribute to the Beatles in 2009, and Songs of the Century, an all-star tribute to Supertramp in 2012. and at the same time, of course, he started working very closely with Billy Sherwood and others. And in 2016, he actually went out in Japan, didn't he, with Sherwood and him doing a live show there. But also, of course, in the meantime, Circa and Yoso and really some fantastic music coming out of that era as well. So he definitely got back into it. What I wanted to do, though, first, before we talk about specifically Pigs and Pyramids, was your thoughts, Mark, on these kinds of albums, and they seem to crop up quite a bit in rock and prog circles, and you know, the not just tributes but also these various artists where they revisit a classic work of rock or progressive rock. Why do you think rock and progressive rock is particularly filled with these sorts of albums?
Well, I mean, there's quite a lot of classic records in our genre that we love here, the progressive rock and stuff like that, and in rock in general, of course. I think a lot of these people like doing it because it's kind of a way for them to tip their hats to their influences and to show maybe how their style came about. I mean, you know, if you go and see it, you know, Tony Kaye appear on a Pink Floyd album, it's obvious that he's trying to tell you that, you know, Richard Wright played an impressive role in his, you know, sort of stylization of his Hammond organ playing, right? I mean, and he's been on quite a few. I mean, like you said, we're talking about Pigs and Pyramids. He was also on another one that I mentioned to you earlier here that I just have in front of me called The Many Faces of Pink Floyd, which is an excellent three-CD version of it. And he plays on that, he does Eclipse with Peter Banks and with John Wetton on that one.
Right.
And, you know, it's these things are fun for these guys to do, I think, because it kind of brings them back to their youth, I think, a lot of the times. And they're playing songs that they really love, and they can sometimes put their own spin on it a little bit, you know, to show what they would do if they were in that position. And, you know, Billy Sherwood, who was good friends with Tony Kaye, he was responsible for doing a lot of these, for executive producing and for putting them together. I remember talking to Billy about that quite a bit one time when I was speaking with him. That, you know, he did a lot of these things, and, you know, and it consisted of, you know, flying tapes out to different studios, people doing them in their studios in their own hometown, sending it back. Nice. Then the advent of the internet made it much easier to get files sent back and forth, so that was fun for him to do. And don't forget, too, not only did Tony appear on records like this that are tributes to bands directly, like Supertramp and Pink Floyd and other bands. He's also appeared on a few things that that Billy has done, for example, like the Prog Collective records, which are absolutely fantastic, where Billy gets a bunch of progressive musicians together, or progressive rock musicians, and he'll write songs and he'll get them to do various tasks on it. Like, you know, Tony Keith put a keyboard solo on it. He'll get Steve Morris from Dixie Dregs or Deep Purple, however you want to look at it, to do a guitar solo. So he's involved in a lot of these things because I think he gets hired by these record labels directly to do these sort of special projects. So Tony Keith's involved in a lot of them. If you really do your research on it and look through his discography, he's on a lot of these records. But I have to highly suggest the Prog Collective. If you don't have it, get it. You can get it on Bandcamp. There's even a vinyl version of it available now too.
Right. Okay, that sounds good. And a very good recommendation. And yeah, I mean, the three that I've just happened to have in front of me here, which I picked down from the shelf just before we recorded, Wondrous, a tribute to Yes, and that's got Rick Wakeman and Adam Wakeman and Nikki Squire and Judy Zook and various people on it, Damian Wilson. And then there's the Yesterday and Today one, which is the 50th anniversary tribute to Yes, which our friend Fernando Perdomo puts together, and Dave Kirzner. Of course, they were the two behind that, and that features just so many people that we know very well, including John Davison and Tony Kaye, and Jay Shellen and Billy Sherwood, etc., Francis Dunnery, and so on. And of course, the other one that I think is great is the Chris Squire tribute, A Life in Yes, which yes. Billy did a couple of years back now, isn't it? And that has a particular link to this collection we're talking about this week, because it's got Comfortably Numb, featuring Chris Squire and Alan White. And so we'll come back to that in a minute, Pink Floyd, and I want to ask you a question about that. So yes, there are many of these, and they don't seem to crop up as much as they do in other genres of music, in pop or whatever. But perhaps I'm wrong about that. If you know many of these albums, which are similar in different genres, then do let me know through the comments on this week's show notes.
Just to let you know, sorry to cut you off, Kevin, but there is there's quite a bit of these in the metal genre as well. I mean, there's a lot of tribute to Iron Maiden, tribute to Judas Priest. I've seen tons of these in record stores before.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. All right then, so let's talk about Pigs and Pyramids, an all-star lineup performing the songs of Pink Floyd. Okay, so it's a very good selection of Pink Floyd songs. Another Brick in the Wall Part 2, Welcome to the Machine, Comfortably Numb, that we'll come back to in a minute, Shine on You Crazy Diamond, which is one of my favourites, I think, Run Like Hell, which is the one we're talking about particularly, Any Colour You Like, Money, Breathe, etc. And, of course, we won't be surprised to hear that the producer and the engineer and the mixer was Billy Sherwood. Of course, and Billy Sherwood also did percussion on various bits, and I imagine put in quite a bit of overdubs and so on on this. So, but as I say, Run Like Hell. Now, here you have Tony Kaye, and so this is the first thing I think he did, and he's on this with an amazing lineup, really, of Dweezil Zappa on guitar, Ainsley Dunbar on drums, Tony Franklin on bass, and Jason Scheff on vocals. And, you know, I can see why people buy so many of these albums, because lineups like this, I mean, it's just a dream team, a different dream team on each song, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't know very much about this compilation tribute record until, you know, you mentioned that we were going to go and do it. So I haven't heard any of it yet, but there's one thing that's definitely certain. When I looked at the lineup of people on it, like, for example, the one where Tony appears on Run Like Hell, Dweezil Zappa, I mean, come on, it's the firstborn son of Frank Zappa. You know he's going to be a fantastic guitar player. I can only imagine how brilliant this is going to sound as far as his guitar playing. But the thing that really stood out to me was Ainsley Dunbar, great drummer, another Zappa, you know, alumnus there, who played with him for quite a while through some of his more popular periods of the Mothers of Invention. And he also became a very known session player. Like he appeared on many different albums throughout the years, and he appeared on the 12 million seller Whitesnake album from 1987. He drummed on that, and that's a huge selling record. And of course, the other thing which I'm going to place money on is that Tony Franklin, who plays bass on this, who appears on numerous bands, The Firm, Blue Murder, other bands. He is a fretless bass player. He only plays fretless bass, and he has such a loud, menacing bass tone. I can only imagine what this must sound like with him playing on this song. And then, of course, you have Tony K with the Hammond organ, which is just brilliant sounding. So I'm very anxious to hear this. I purposefully didn't listen to any of this because I wanted to, you know, have my comments fresh when we talk about it in more detail.
Well, yes, indeed. And I've got myself a secondhand copy of it coming towards me as we speak through the postal system, despite the COVID situation. So the other song that is particularly interesting on this for us, of course, is Comfortably Numb, as I mentioned a moment ago, which has got bass and vocals by one Chris Squire, drums by Alan White, and vocals and guitar by Billy Sherwood. Now, I think I'm right in saying that this is the recording which turns up in at least two other places that I can find. I don't know if you know, Mark, if this is the same recording as on the Chris Squire tribute album, and also on another tribute album to another Brick in the Wall, I think.
And I'm also wondering if it's the same one that I see here on the Many Faces of Pink Floyd, because it says here, Comfortably Numb with Chris Squire and Alan White of Yes. So if this is the same one, then boy, they got a lot of mileage out of that one recording. That's for sure. I mean, to appear on three different albums, I mean, that must be, you know, that's extra, you know, money in their pocket. I mean, probably not a lot, but it's just extra stuff for something that they only had to record once. So, I haven't heard this version either, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And with that lineup, though, I mean, it's worth putting on as many times as you possibly can. I mean, but there are plenty of other people on this, and I'll just pick out another few names that we all know for Mike Porcaro with his Yes connections, and Greg Bissonette, amazing drummer, and let me look down, Steve Luthaker, Shine On You Crazy Diamond he plays on, and Glenn Hughes, and Tony Levin, Mike Baird,
Ronnie Montrose.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a huge number of amazing things on there. We'll have a listen to it, and then we'll think about exactly which songs we're going to concentrate on. Presumably, obviously, those two that have got the Yes Men in them, but then other ones as well, which have big links, I'm sure we can talk about. So, yes, very, very excited to hear what that is like. And I was just wondering about that connection between Billy and Tony Kay. Obviously, they met, I would have thought, on the Talk Tour. Do you know of any other pre-Talk Tour times that they'd worked together?
I'm not aware of anything prior to Talk. To me, that almost seems like the most logical entry point, I would think. I mean, unless that there was some kind of connection with them. I mean, I can't think of where else. I mean, Union, when was that? That was before Talk, right? So it's possible because Billy was involved with Union then. Maybe there might have been maybe an odd chance that he might have had some connection with it, even though I'm sure Tony K had not a lot to do with that stuff as well, but who knows?
No.
I mean, if it wasn't that, it would definitely be obviously Talk.
Yeah. And I also found on Wikipedia, I think, something that doesn't sound quite right to me. It says, around 2006, Yes member Billy Sherwood asked K to play on some Pink Floyd tribute albums. I think it was earlier than that. But anyway, K had been out of the music industry for some time and was partly residing in the Cayman Islands. A very big fan of Pink Floyd. He could not refuse the offer, and he says he got his B3 out of retirement, which is very exciting for everyone. During the recording sessions, the pair entered discussions on forming a new band, which led to the announcement of Circa in 2007. Since transporting Kay's B3 to Sherwood's studio and gigs was too difficult, Kay plays the software synthesizer Hammond B4 from a laptop through a controller keyboard. Both formed the short-lived supergroup Yoso, which formed in 2009 and disbanded in 2011. So it's all just a big family, isn't it, the prog rock world?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems like if once you get a friendship with one of these people, it seems like everything starts to branch out from there. It's almost like how I kind of discovered that kind of happened with us as well within this podcast. You know, you make contact with Billy, then Billy can say, hey, you know what? I'll help you guys connect with this guy. You know, you connect with somebody else, and then they find something. You know, it's just like a big family tree of connections that happens. And I'm sure it's exactly the same way in the music business. It was the same way like that when I was in it as well. I mean, I met one guy, he introduced me to another guy, and that was it. But one thing I have to say that I was very pleased about is that when I read that bit about Tony moving to the Cayman Islands during that time, one thing is for certain, he obviously made a good amount of money off of the Big Generator tour and the preceding 90125 tour, because living in the Caymans can't be cheap, so good for Tony.
Absolutely. And of course it all culminated not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but for me on the 50th anniversary tour in the US, where he played at the 50th anniversary event in Philadelphia, which I think, you know, brings us all right the way back to the origins of the band, of course, which was wonderful. Okay, well, I'm really looking forward to listening to this album, and we will probably in a couple of weeks' time come back to give you our thoughts on that. And in the meantime, do please let us know what you think about Tony Kaye and his work after Yes, in this period, and after leaving Yes, after the Talk tour. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
I've had all Yes Music podcasts every week. I love to hear what Kevin says. I've had all Yes Music podcasts every week. I love to hear what Kevin says.
Just before we go, here are the YMP producers and half the patrons. The producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. And half of those podcast patrons are Aaron Steelman, Bob Martellotta, Brian Sullivan, Chris Bandini, Craig Estenes, Dave Owen, David Hayden, Lind, David Pannell, Dave Watkinson, Dem, Doug Curran, Fergus Cubbage, Fred Barringer, Jeff Bailey, Jeffrey Mason, Guy de Rome, Henrik Antonsen, H.P. Peterson, Ian N.B., Jamie McQuinn, Ken Fuller, Michael Handahan, Jim, John Cowan, John Holden, John Parry, John Thompson, and Barry Gorski. Robert and David, as always, continued thanks to them as well. So thank you very much indeed to those patrons. If you'd like to join them to help keep the lights on here at the new and improved YMP Towers, please do head over to Patreon, patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast, or click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. That's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We do hope to be back next week. And in the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.